We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Hello, friends. Welcome to Pod Maverick. That is not the right banner on the show. Welcome to Pod Maverick After Dark. I'm Kirk Henderson, and you're joined, as always, by myself and Josh Bowe. We are editors over at MavsMoneyBall.com. Thank you so much for hanging out with us after this game. It is right after midnight. It's technically Saturday here in the Central Time Zone. The Dallas Mavericks just defeated the Sacramento Kings for the second time in a row. This time, 107 to 103. Josh, how are you?
I'm doing good. How do you feel about the 2024 NBA champion Dallas Mavericks
team? I mean, this is kind of one of them games where this was the ugliest game they've ever won in the Luka Doncic Kyrie era. This was the ugliest game they've ever won, in my opinion. And I was... Like, my heart was kind of in my throat for a significant portion of this game because the Mavericks just couldn't get over the hump. They just couldn't. After a pretty rough defensive first quarter and some, like, really awful misses, it really felt like this was going to be one where we were just going to be mad. Like, one that they should have gotten somehow, some way. And then they won the game somehow, some way. And I'm still sort of trying to figure out how, because the box score is stupid. Like, if I was a Kings fan, I would be really pissed.
You'd be throwing up.
I'd be really, really pissed because Sabonis was ass, but also got bodied a ton. The Mavericks shot three times as many free throws as the Kings. That's wild.
Mm-hmm.
And what's crazy is I'm trying to really understand how, because I felt like the physicality in this game was very even. Like, the Kings gave it just as much as the Mavericks did. And I honestly don't remember 33 free throw attempts. I guess Kyrie shot a number in the fourth quarter, which really helped kind of boost that number.
I mean, Luka had 14 on his own. So
yeah. Like, and he missed so damn many.
So that's kind of where they all came from. But yeah, I mean, that's a crazy win. I think if you're kind of looking at, I mean, obviously Mavs fans want every game, but if you're kind of looking at it detached, you know, you kind of take the split, right? Like, you would, I don't think anyone would be too upset. I mean,
right,
outside of fan emotion, if you didn't get both games, like, a split was totally a reasonable outcome. And then they take both of them and they do it in a way where it felt like they kind of just broke the Kings' souls in that second half, like, absolutely wore them down in a way that a Luka Doncic Mavericks team doesn't really do all that often. They did end up making threes, which is funny, but they weren't making threes for most of the game. But this just followed the trend. This is what they've been doing for the last 10, 11, 12 games. their defense is going to give you some threes, and yep. Fox walked into some pull-up threes. Keon Ellis got some open threes. Keegan Murray got a couple open threes, but they're not giving you the paint, and they're not giving you the rim, and they're just, you're not scoring inside the three-point line, basically, is kind of what their defensive philosophy is. Like, yeah, maybe we overhelp. Maybe we shade a little bit too much, and we're going to give up a backside three or a weak side corner three or a kick-out wing three. But you're not scoring at the rim. Like, you're just not. And the Kings shot 12 of 26 in the restricted area, and they shot 9 of 25 in the paint outside the restricted area. And when you consider how good Sabonis is, when you consider how good De'Aaron Fox is in that floater range, like, this was a defensive clinic these last two games. I mean, it really was. I mean, I know the Kings started off hot, but that's kind of expected. Like, they were embarrassed on Tuesday night. Like, you got to expect that they're going to show some pride. They're not a bad team.
No, they're a great team.
Yeah, the Mavericks wore them down. Like, they just wore them down. Like, they just wouldn't let them get comfortable inside the three-point line. And you kind of – the Kings shot well from three, 47%, but they
basically – I wanted to talk about that. The fact that they survived that is kind of bananas.
Yeah, and they survive it because they don't give up anything easy, and they don't give up anything else. I mean, easy, you know, they do give up some easy threes, but three is worth more than two, and it's not great to give up as many open threes as Mavericks do. But if they're going to be this good guarding the paint, which, you know, a layup is the best shot in basketball, like an open
right.
layup. As much as three is greater than two, like, the greatest shot in basketball is an open shot right around the rim. So if they're going to basically lock those down, and with Gafford and Lively basically playing 48 minutes, and with Exum and with Derek Jones Jr. both healthy and playing, like, they kind of have the horses to do this. Like, I don't think this is smoke and mirrors. Like, I think this is sustainable.
It's truly crazy. I mean, you're looking at who hit the threes tonight for the Kings. Murray, who's a heck of a basketball player. He's kind of like he'd be a fantastic finishing piece in this Mavericks team. Was 4-7 from deep. He missed all of his two pointers, which is that's the thing you pointed out. Fox hit 3 3-pointers. Keon Ellis hit 4 of 9. Kessler Edwards was 3 of 3. I thought the Mavericks in the second quarter and on, maybe the second half, really stopped giving, like, Sabonis. No, you know what? Fuck it. I'm just going to do my Sabonis thing now.
Dude, you got fired up earlier.
Uh-huh. Sabonis is a dirty fucking cheap shot artist who does the KG screening shit where he's just spinning around like a turnstile, throwing his elbows, throwing his ass, throwing his shoulders, making the very smart bet that the refs aren't going to call fouls. And how that relates to the three-pointers that the Kings were getting off is Luka was more or less letting – he was kind of – it was almost like a soft switch for a moment where he would sort of grab on to Sabonis, go under it, and then let Keon Ellis shoot the three. I was about to lose my mind with Luka in the first quarter, because it's just like, dude, like, play a little defense. And in the second half, beyond, the Mavericks stopped letting that crap happen from the top of the key. And that was much more helpful to at least the star players. Like, when Kessler Edwards, shout out Pepperdine's own Kessler Edwards, pretty good player, hit 3 of 3. I think he hit them all in the fourth quarter. Those are the ones that you live with. You know, when Murray's, like, when the starters are drilling threes and you're just not closing out, that was pissing me off. But this was just one of those games where the Mavericks matched defensive physicality. And that's just not a thing I'm used to saying. It's going to take me a while to get used to how physical this Mavericks team plays. It's really something.
Yeah. And I mean, it's the trade deadline. I mean, mm-hmm. they finally got size. I mean, Lively is no longer a man on an island in the paint. You can finally rotate in Gafford and Lively together, so you never have to play small if you don't want to. I mean, they can tactically still go to Maxi at the five, but they really haven't needed to lately. And PJ at the four, his offense is really bad. Like, I'm not gonna sugarcoat it.
But his arms are everywhere on defense.
His length and size defensively just makes such a difference. And I know the Mavericks, you know, Dorian at the four was kind of the last time they had that. But even then, Dorian at the four, like, Dorian was a three to me that they asked to guard fours. And he did the best that he could. Like, PJ feels more, like, strength-wise, size-wise, length-wise. Like, he's a more legitimate, like, four-man defensively, I feel like. And the way he's able to, like, tags roll men that are bigger than him, like a Sabonis. Like, how many times did he cover up Sabonis on the weak side rotation because Gafford or Lively is maybe, you know, contesting like Fox or whoever the ball handler is in the mid range, and then they try to, you know, then PJ kind of has to dive down onto Sabonis, and it's like it wasn't an advantage. Like, Sabonis on PJ was not an advantage for the Kings. And that's a testament to PJ's buy-in on the defensive end, because he's always had the tools, but like he was not doing this in Charlotte. Outside of like certain moments. So like him and Jones and Exum, like Gafford and Lively get a lot of the headlines defensively because they get so many blocks and because they've been that good. Like, not trying to take anything away from them, they've been incredible. But like, what makes them able to do their jobs and be able to play that drop coverage is you need perimeter players that can chase ball handlers around a screen, which Jones and Exum have been doing. And you need that swing forward defensively that can help rotate and crash down in the paint. And so your low man isn't like a 6'4" guy that's getting scored on over and over again. Like, the fact that, you know, how many times have we seen, you know, last season where the Mavericks were getting just brutalized in the paint because like Luka was asked to be the second tallest guy on the floor. And sometimes teams would get them into rotation and the low man rotating to help at the rim would be like a guard, like Theo Pensen or, you know, who was the McKinley, the two-way guard. Like, you know, you just have these outrageous moments where you got these small guys crashing down in the paint to guard because they just played these small lineups with Gafford, with Jones, with Washington, Exum. Like, the only small player on the court most of the time is Kyrie. And Kyrie, you know, he gets beat a couple times, but if you can live with Kyrie being your smallest guy on the floor, and I think you're just kind of seeing that in effect right now.
Well, yeah, and we're 11 minutes into the game, and we've not even said, like, Kyrie's name that much, which...
And he saved the game.
Like, two things were... Dude. Fourth quarter was two things. The first was it, and I wrote about this in the recap. I think it was Ellis hit a three at the 9-minute mark of the fourth quarter. The Kings were up 92-82, so the Mavericks were down 10 with 9 minutes. Over the next 9 minutes of basketball, the Kings only scored 11 points. Kyrie went on a one-man run, scoring 14 points, I think, from essentially that point on. He was involved in 5 out of every 6 plays in the Mavericks' offense. The Kings just sent hard blitzes at Luka all night long, and they're actually pretty effective. And Kyrie was really, really, really good in that quarter.
14 points, didn't miss a shot. 4-4 from the field, 2-of-2 from 3, 4-5.
He missed a free throw, which was hilarious. Like, the man is, I think he'd made like 91 in a row at that point.
Yeah. I mean, he's not that far. I mean, he's not going to get it because it's too late, but he's been flirting with a 50-40-90 season this year. He's at 49.4, 41 from 3, 90.2 on the free throw line. So, yeah, his shooting's been incredible. And it was on display in the fourth. And again, like, his two threes weren't easy threes.
Nope.
Like, it was the pull-up transition three, which feels like...
See, I think that one's an easy one.
Yeah, that one's
He's the most...
easy.
Well, it's just such a great shot because the person who used to do it the most, and the Mavericks hadn't had anybody like this in a long time. I guess Monta Ellis kind of, he preferred the long two.
Yeah.
Jason Terry. It's very Jason Terry, and that Mavericks team never ran like this team. So it's really fun to watch Kyrie doing that. Like, I'm pretty sure Kyrie is shooting something like 44% on those shots. Like, it's something absolutely bonkers. And you just don't, like, I love it. I love the shot. I would much prefer that than seeing Tim Hardaway Jr. shoot ever again at this point. I don't know.
Well, don't go there yet. Let's talk a little more. But
no. I'm just saying, it's like Kyrie was just, he was so important to that quarter because Luka was just, I mean,
he was on
the Mavericks are going to have to consider sitting Luka at some point with how banged up he looks. because he was. I mean, like, he bled through his knee pad, and Nick Angstad pointed out they didn't bandage his knee.
No, they just wrapped it. They wrapped
his knee up. Yeah, yeah.
So. Kyrie's shooting now. This doesn't include transition, but he's shooting 39.4% on pull-up threes, which is really good considering he takes almost four of them per game. So that's really good. And then his other three was like a stare down, like face up three after taking a couple of jab steps. Like, it's not like he just had catch and shoot shots. He made some great shots. And yeah, the Kings, it's kind of funny because pre-trade deadline, it felt like doubling Luka and getting the ball out of his hands that way was like the dumbest defensive strategy you could do, because it's like, why would you give these limited players why would you make their lives easier? Like, and we saw when they lost 5 of 6, teams were like, what if we just guarded Luka one-on-one and we didn't let these role players get open shots and let's see what happens. And Luka was scoring like 40 points a game and everyone else was doing nothing and they lost 5 of 6. And I was like, why did, you know, and some teams have kind of stopped doing that. Some of that's regular season because teams just don't scout regular season like they would if it was a playoff series, which is understandable. There's 82 games. You can't get film sessions and tape and practice time and before all these games to kind of go over what you want to do defensively. But I also think like these guys were like PJ and Tim and these guys were missing so many shots that they were probably like, all right, screw it. Let's just go back to doubling Luka because PJ is shooting like 28% from three. Tim's shooting like 20% from three since the trade deadline or the All-Star break or whatever it is. Like, it's almost like the role players have shot so poorly. Like, Maxey's not shooting well, although he made two huge threes tonight. Like, they've probably been like this. They've been a bad shooting team since the All-Star break. So teams have probably felt more comfortable doubling Luka. And then you saw it. And, you know, the Mavericks made 15 threes. Exum makes the game winner. That's just kind of, you pick your poison with this team. It's just.
Can we point out, before we go to break, I think we need to talk about one more positive thing that makes no sense to me.
Okay.
How many shots, you know the answer to this, but how many shots would you have guessed Gafford and Lively missed during this game?
Is it cheating that I already know the answer?
I really felt like they were both pretty bleh on offense. And then you look at the box score and they missed a total of 4 shots. The combined Maverick center rotation was 8 of 12 from the field with 16 rebounds and 4 blocks.
Which feels bad.
Like, compared to how they have played, for sure. But I mean,
they were fine.
They were fantastic.
I think what the number there is not the makes, it's the attempts.
Sure.
And the
those
points
were down. Yeah.
Like, Gafford scored 6 points. That's the least points he's scored since the Philadelphia game on March 3rd. And Lively had 12, which is a decent amount, but a 7 attempts. Like, them combining for what? So that'd be 18. I think that has to be the least amount they've combined for in a while. And it felt deliberate, right?
Yeah.
The Kings were taking away the role man. And I think that's what got the Mavericks gunked up early.
Well, and that's what's going to happen.
Yes, I mean, that's going to happen in the playoffs. That's why the threes they made is huge.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And what I've enjoyed seeing is the pick and roll, you know, understanding Luka's the pick and roll maestro because he's 6'8 and can place the ball in certain places. It's also nice watching other players get involved with the pick and roll with those guys. So, All right, we're at 17 minutes. My turn to shill for a little bit. If you could do us a favor and head down and like the stream, those of you here who are here live, it's very appreciated by Josh and myself. If you could also consider subscribing while we're down there, we're inching bit by bit closer to 3,000. We're like 300 people away, which is a whole lot of people, but every subscription matters to Josh and I. We would appreciate that. Those of you who are listening on the audio stream, if you could go ahead and leave a review, you know, shoot me an email if you want, share with your friends. You know, this is a community podcast. I think I'll probably do a short secondary live show tonight. I'm already up. I have an early morning and a long weekend ahead, but you know what, I'll just inject some caffeine into my eyeballs. So if you guys don't know what post live show we're talking about, just stay on the stream at the end of the, when Josh and I end the show, and you'll be able to hang out with me and come up and talk a little basketball. Now for those of you listening on the audio version of the show, I'm going to insert some ads. If you could do that, that would be fantastic. And we'll be right back.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
If you're a basketball junkie, then you know there's no better time of year than the NBA playoffs. Twice a week, JJ Redick is cooking on his podcast, The Old Man and the Three. He has guys come on in all stages of their careers to talk about the league and share stories you won't hear anywhere else, including Devin Booker on why he talks so much trash, Ray Allen's epic free throw competitions with LeBron in Miami, and the moment Tyrese Halliburton knew Pascal Siakam would be a good fit in Indy. In addition to player interviews, every Monday, JJ breaks down the top three things happening around the NBA with unmatched analysis, not outlandish takes, and is often joined by masterminds of the game like Tim Legler to dive deep on rookie reports, trade breakdowns, and why is mean mugging now a tech? You won't find another outlet that covers the game as comprehensively and with such insight as JJ does it on The Old Man and the Three. Make this your companion podcast during the playoffs. Listen to The Old Man and the Three ad-free on Wondery Plus or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, thank you for letting me chill for a minute. So there's a couple of other things I think we could positively talk about. My favorite was the Maxi Kleber. Absolute, like, that felt like a turning point in the game. Maxi Kleber, it was a broken play. He hit a three, like 35 feet. Looked like 2021 Maxi, quite candidly, with how the shot came off his hands. And then he hit another big three. And it's just nice to see some proof of life from Maxi. I mean,
can they program his brain so he thinks every three he's taking is with the shot clock running down or the game clock running down? Because I feel like when he gets those catch and shoot opportunities, either at the end of a quarter or end of the game or end of the shot clock, those feel so much, they look better too. Like he's got more lift. Like it's almost like he's not thinking and he just has to fire. And there's no hesitation because he can't hesitate or the shot clock's running out. Like, can we do that? Can we like get the Matrix to make it seem like that's what it looks like? Cause I feel like he's much better when, on those types of shots.
And, you know, this was just a really fascinating game. Coaching staff deserves credit for a lot of this. I don't think we've talked about it very much. We don't need to comment on this very much, but shout out to Jason Kidd for letting it be known through media allies that he would like an extension as next year is the last year of his contract. Really loved that right now after the Mavericks have won a lot of games. Tickled me to pieces. Trying to think if like there's anything else positive that we're really missing. Exum, you want to talk about that starting like that closing lineup maybe for a bit? What was who's the closing lineup that we think is sort of there? That I don't call it the death lineup, but it's the group that they go to take things home.
Yeah, it was the starters with Exum instead of Jones. So Kyrie, Luka, Exum, PJ, Gafford, and you could kind of rotate in Lively if Lively needs to close over Gafford. Like they're fairly interchangeable. But yeah, that was it. And it was, I mean, this is what they're gonna have to do in the playoffs. The Kings blitz the pick and roll. PJ or Exum was the release valve, and Exum was either getting wide open threes or PJ was diving into the lane and then creating a wide open three for Exum. It's kind of silly, like, cause you want to think basketball is more complex than this, but it's make or miss league. Like Exum had three wide open chances. The Mavericks made the right play each time. They ran good offense. Like it wasn't a case of them doing that thing where they don't run a good play or they don't get a good shot because the ball gets too stagnant. They took what the defense gave them, made the right read. Exum had two wide open threes and then a pretty clean layup drive that came off another double team, and he missed all three, and then he got a fourth chance and he made it and they won. And that's, you'll never see a more stark contrast between like what the Mavericks need to do down the stretch to win games, you know, than that. Like, that's what it's going to look like when they lose, Exum missing those shots, and then him making that shot. That's what it's going to look like when they win, because maybe teams do what they did to Luka, where they just face guard him or they just guard him one-on-one and they don't let these role players get open shots. Maybe that happens more in the playoffs, but I feel like teams are like, I think the way coaches think, I think they're going to double Luka down the stretch, or they're going to double Kyrie in the pick and roll, and they're going to see if Exum is actually that good, and he was again tonight.
Well, and it's important, I think, to acknowledge and sort of understand what the coaching staff is up against here, because look, Derek Jones Jr. has been an absolutely incredible signing for the Mavericks for the value. But if things don't work out the way we all want them to this year, that's going to be the one position that I think they're going to try to figure out how to upgrade, because you're, for everything that Jones can bring defensively, offensively, he just takes a whole lot off the table. He just does. So you can't play, but you also can't play Exum 30 minutes a night. No. You don't want that. That'll break him down, I think, over the course of the season. I wouldn't be surprised if he has some 30-minute nights come playoffs and you see Jones playing, you know, 15 to right. 20. Yeah. But that's sort of the balance in things that the Mavericks...
You got to get there, though. You got to get Exum healthy.
And that's the thing. So you got to get there with everybody healthy. And I think the coaching staff's been doing a pretty brilliant job getting all that stuff balanced. Shout out to Paul. Thank you for the tip, Paul. He says, this show makes supporting the Mavs in Ireland for the past 5 years worthwhile. Luka not forcing anything these last 3 to 4 minutes told me all I need to know about this team. That's a great point, Paul. Really appreciate that. But it's that sort of element of what the Mavs are doing right now with that lineup is very interesting to me. And it's tough because there's certain points, and I've talked about this where at least amongst friends, where it's like, man, I really want to see Exum play more. And I just think they got to be judicious with those minutes. So,
yeah, for sure. And I think I didn't get to read your recap yet, but we talked about it in Slack. So I'm not sure if you mentioned it yet there, but the Exum, and I post about this on Twitter, the Exum game winner was awesome. Like, it's awesome to see the Mavericks keep
right. It's a game
putting
winner.
In their position.
It is a real game winner.
Yeah. And it's awesome that they trusted him in that situation and they didn't stick away from it. And Luka didn't take a hero ball shot. Like, they just kept kind of trusting the process and it worked out. But the real key to the win is like, it's half and half. Half of it is, yes, Exum made that shot, but also the fact that he had the opportunity to make that shot despite missing his previous three. Like, if the Mavericks don't play good defense, that Exum doesn't have a chance for a game winner, because they'd be down maybe 5, 6, 7 points at that opportunity, because, you know, they went, you know, what, 3, 4 possessions in a row scoreless. And so did the Kings, because they kind of met them almost every time. The Mavericks never trailed, I don't think, in the final, whenever they got
it was stuck at 103 for quite a while.
And a lot of that was Exum defensively and the way that the Mavericks are playing defense. De'Aaron Fox was 2 of 7 from the floor in the fourth quarter. He was 0 of 1 from three. And I think the one 3-point attempt is really important, because in the first half he had 4 3-point attempts. In the second half, what did he have? He had 3, but only 1 in the final quarter. Like, he's a good pull-up 3-point shooter now. And I think the way when you play this kind of drop coverage that the Mavericks play, that opens you up to pull up threes from capable guards that can hit that shot on you. And what's crucial is you got to have the guy that's guarding the ball handler go over the screen and be able to chase from behind the ball handler to force him inside the 3-point line. So he's not walking into, you know, a rhythm 3-point shot, which Fox was doing a little bit more of in the first half. And I thought Exum did a great job making sure that Fox couldn't pull up from three cleanly in the pick and roll, forced him into the paint. And it's a twofer, because for one, you're not giving up a pull-up three, you know, to a good pull-up three-point shooter. But also, if you can chase him inside the three-point line, you're getting him closer to your center who's playing up. So you're getting him closer to help defense. So that just helps you even more. So it's like a combined thing. You're getting the benefit of running him off the three-point line if you're chasing over the screen from behind. And then also you get the benefit of forcing him into your help, because that's the whole point of drop, right? Is you want to get those contested 15-foot, you know, floater range shots, which are typically inefficient shots if you can contest them well. And I thought Exum did a great job in the final moments, forcing Fox into those tough shots, and then the back line holding up strong, and then had the opportunity for the game winner.
Yep. Quick shout out to, and I'm going to butcher this name, I apologize in advance. I want to say it's Mihalo Nezevic. Hope that's right. It's fantastic. He shot us a tip as well. Really appreciate. But 95% of our listeners and viewers are men, according to the demographics that we get on Spotify. So I'm just assuming it's a guy. Thank you so much. Really appreciate these tips, guys. This is wild. I never would have expected anything like this these past two podcasts. I really PJ Washington. Get LASIK. That's sort of my I'm just gonna live with this. Like, his shots are so bad.
Yeah, I don't know what's going on.
So bad.
I don't know what's going on there.
That three he made to start the third quarter looked nothing like any of his threes in the first half, and then nothing like the ones that came after.
I know. When he misses, you know it's a miss before the shot's even halfway through its arch. Like, they're not like lined up, like they're just off. But yeah, I don't know. They could survive with him shooting the way he's shooting, but in the playoffs, like teams are gonna treat him like Tony Allen. Like,
you made a point. Could you sort of explain what you meant where he's like you said that teams are shading him middle? They know he wants to drive to the center from the corners. Could you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, so I mean, we've talked about before, he loves the floater. Like, he's got a nice little push shot in the paint.
Goes in.
He's been good at it. Yeah, he's good at it. I feel like teams are starting to get a sense of that now, especially now that he's not in Charlotte. And I think teams are taking him a little bit more seriously than they do in Charlotte. That's the other thing. Like, it's great that he's in a better environment, but also, like, he's no longer enjoying the obscurity of being on a crappy team that teams don't prepare as seriously for. So I think he's higher up on the scouting report than he's ever been before. Like, teams are paying attention to him because they have to pay attention to Dallas because they're a good team. So I feel like he hasn't been getting that floater off as much recently, because I feel like when he catches and teams are closing out on him, they're closing out on him to the middle, and they're trying to take that floater away, because that's what he likes to do when he attacks the closeout. So he needs the counter and find, like, you know, it kind of goes against basketball reason, because you want to go middle. Like, usually going middle is what opens everything up when you're driving. But if teams are going to shade him that hard when they're closing out on him, he has to be able to adjust and go baseline, because he might be able to catch a team off guard, catch a rotation off guard, and either get a dunk or get like a little drop off to Gafford or Lively, force the help rotation, keep the blender going. Because there were a couple of possessions tonight where someone closed out on him. He drove, tried to go middle, and the defender was waiting for him to go middle, and it kind of just, the possession kind of stopped.
Yep.
Like, he didn't go anywhere, had to pass it out, and you almost have to reset with like little time on the shot clock. So
I mean, he is now 32 of 116 from three. That is 27.6%.
He's 38% from the field, 27% from three in the month of March.
We need, what'd you say he is from the field?
He's 38% from the field.
We need like 42% from the field and like 31% from three to not die.
Right.
Like, fucking like one more shot out of every 10 going down right now. It's just, he doesn't need to be Reggie Bullock. He's so valuable elsewhere. He's just gotta not die on offense.
Right. And teams are gonna, and they did a little bit tonight, like Sabonis was guarding him, and they put a small on Gafford or Lively, because you don't think that the Mavericks are gonna throw the ball into the post to Gafford or Lively to take advantage of the mismatch. And then when you've got a smaller player on Gaffer Lively, you can switch the pick and roll. So you take away the easy lobs or the easy, drop offs in the pick and roll. And then you put a big on Washington and you just keeps your big out of the pick and roll because they don't run it as much with Washington.
Yep.
So they're going to have to counter that. Like a little, that's going to be,
I think it's, I think solvable. It's doable. Yeah. It's just everything sort of grinds to a halt when him and Tim Hardaway aren't hitting any of the shots they're getting, which was the case tonight. Like, Tim is another problem child. Like, he and Washington were 3 of 17 from the floor.
Oh, Tim was so bad.
Tim's shot making choices are getting worse, and I don't understand how, because his shot making decisions have always been garbage. But it's like, when I see him shoot Monta Ellis two pointers, I want to scream. If you're going to take a shitty shot, at least take a long three pointer shitty shot.
I know, but at least the thing with Tim, though, fans are going to want like no minutes, and they're going to want Jaden Hardy.
Now they have, he has to play some minutes. Yeah.
At least there's a quick enough hook. Like, he only played 20 minutes. How many? I mean, I'm going to look it up right now. I don't think
he was good. Like, the first quarter,
he played in the fourth quarter.
No,
he didn't play at all in the fourth quarter. So like, I get it. Like, he probably shouldn't have played 20 minutes, but like, if he's not playing in the fourth.
Well, you had to, because Kyrie got hurt there in the third, and somebody had to eat some of those minutes while we were figuring out what was up.
Yeah. And fans are going to respond, well, why isn't that Hardy doing that? But that's just, I don't know. That's not going to, I don't think kid trusts Hardy right now.
I don't either. Shout out to Chaz in the chat for the tip. Thank you very much. Appreciate that. I don't know. Is there anything else we need to hit on?
When do we, this is probably the not 33 minutes into a podcast on a late Saturday night, but when do we have the Josh Green conversation?
Who?
Exactly. Who's? Yeah. That might be the conversation. Is that the open and shut?
Well, why don't you share? Did you write on that? I can't remember.
I'm about to. I'm going to get something done this weekend.
And I don't want to throw it out there. But let's just say that the Josh of it all, with how Dallas has been winning. Sorry if you can hear the baby crying in the background. I'm going to have to go take care of him.
Oh, yeah. Let's wrap up.
That's okay. We're doing a sleep training method where we don't bother him for at least 15 minutes. We know Josh Green is out. We're talking about when he comes back. Like, I don't think he fits. Like, if you're shortening to an 8-man rotation, I don't really think you play. It's so, that's the thing. I think we're kind of done here. I mean, the Mavericks play, let's just look at the schedule real quick. Cause the schedule was something of note to me that I was interested in. They play Sunday afternoon, early evening at the Rockets. Then they play for their fifth straight road game on Tuesday against Golden State late. If they can walk away with this road trip with 5 straight wins, that's just absolutely astounding. The rest of their the rest of this season's games are all trap games. Every single one of them is a trap game. And like, guys, they really they need some help, but they can keep climbing.
They really can. It's so bizarre that they're winning all these games and it's like they're barely scratching out of the play-in. So like they can both like finish maybe fourth, but if they lose like 2 out of 3 in these next couple of games, they could be right back to eighth.
Well, the Clippers, the
way everyone else is playing.
The Clippers have righted their ship a little bit because they defeated the Magic and the Sixers in a pair of literal coin flip games. Like the Sixers game, they stole, Kawhi Leonard fouled Kelly Oubre, and then tonight they beat the Magic. So, and then they play the Hornets and they play the Kings Nuggets, and so it's like then they play a pair of games against the Suns. It's like there's some interesting stuff going down the stretch. Like, the Mavericks really have an opportunity. They just need to keep doing what they can do and win the games they're supposed to win. I'm sort of curious, just because I think that there's going to be the temptation I think they're going to have a serious discussion about whether they need to sit Luka for a game or two just so he can heal up a little bit. And
Luka.
He's the engine.
Yeah, Luka didn't take a shot in the restricted area tonight.
Yeah, which they played him great. The Kings played him great. Like, there's no other way around it.
I like Murray. Murray's in the yeah, they played him a lot. Yeah. All right. Rockets, by the way, have won 11 in a row. So that's not going to be an easy game. And they're really good at home. So that might be, I'll just say, that's going to be the hardest game they have on their schedule that they've got left, is this Sunday game against the Rockets. So if they win that game, if the Mavericks win that game, I don't know. Like, everyone can start make whatever wild over the top predictions.
Well, the Rockets terrify me because they've won like 11 games in a row now or something.
Yeah, 11 in a row.
I do not like that's just scary.
Amen Thompson, your boy, he's playing a lot. He's awesome. Like they're rolling.
All right, guys. I don't think I'm going to do a live show now just because I think I should probably go take care of the baby. Okay. Thanks so much for hanging out. This has been fun. Josh and I will be back on Sunday afternoon or early evening, probably for an earlier podcast. I'll try to do a show then. We'll see though, because then I'll have to I'll be doing a baby feed because I am going to be by myself this weekend. All right, guys, thanks so much for hanging out. Thanks for the tips, everyone. Please again, leave comments on the show if you're watching on the YouTube later. Send us emails to tweets. I at least check my Twitter. Sometimes Josh doesn't, which is probably the smart thing to do. This has been Kirk Henderson and Josh Bowe. Everybody be good and go Mavs.